Here's another edition of BayCare Health Systems podcast series, BayCare Health Chat with Melanie Cole.
If you're one of the many who struggle with managing your diabetes, you may have questions about how best to live with and manage it so that you can live a healthier lifestyle. My guest today is Dr. Phuong Nguyen. She's board certified in family medicine at BayCare Health. Dr. Nguyen, what happens when we eat, and why do we need to understand insulin and blood sugar and their relationship?
We need to first understand that there are two types of diabetes. Diabetes has type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes. Now, in type 1 diabetes, the body cannot produce insulin well. And insulin is the hormone that breaks down the sugar in our body. So what happens in type 1 diabetes is the body's immune system destroys the beta cells in the pancreas that are responsible for producing insulin. Now, type 1 diabetes is going to be seen more in childhood and adolescence. Type 2 diabetes is known as adult onset diabetes, where the production of insulin exists, but the body can't use it effectively because the insulin resistance builds up as sugar builds up in the blood, and that has to do a lot with someone's lifestyle management.
So as we're talking today mainly about type 2 diabetes, which you physicians are seeing more and more in children, as well as a result of the obesity epidemic and sedentary lifestyle, you speak about some of the causes that we're seeing from kids on up to adults at what puts you at risk for diabetes.
Definitely weight is a huge factor. According to a report in a CDC National Center for Health Statistics recently, there's 1 in 7 adults with diabetes, and 10% of them are aware, and so that is not a huge percentage. So there's a lot of undiagnosed out there. Definitely, if you have obesity, it puts you at risk, and we're finding about 21% of adults with obesity has diabetes. Then there's the overweight adults, and 12% of those have diabetes. And even if you're underweight or normal weight, you might have diabetes. That's about 6% of adults.
Wow, it really is some staggering numbers. And what about the complications of diabetes? If someone has type 2, what other comorbidities can come with a diagnosis or disorder of diabetes? And if it's undiagnosed, what are some of the complications that could happen?
Right. The worst case scenario, if you don't know you have diabetes, you might develop a heart attack or stroke and never knew that you had diabetes until you're admitted into the hospital with, you know, and if they're able to save you, they find out. And that would be the worst case to find out whether or not you have diabetes. Let's say you know you have diabetes, but you're unable to control it. Blood sugar builds up in the body. That can cause blindness. That's what we call retinopathy. And sometimes it can lead to kidney dysfunction, and that's called diabetic nephropathy. And all can increase your mortality.
Are there any symptoms? Is there anything we've heard with juvenile diabetes and type 1, the thirst and that sort of thing? Are there any symptoms that you would notice if you are at risk for type 2 diabetes or even pre-diabetes?
Yes. Sometimes you could feel very weak or very tired, and that is a signal of blood sugar being too high in your body. Some people can present with dizziness, some people can faint, and, you know, that would be pretty much very uncontrolled diabetes. But sometimes there's no symptoms at all, especially if your diabetes is, you know, not that advanced yet, then you might not know. So it's very important that every adult has a primary care physician, goes in annually for their visit to find out if they need to get tested for diabetes or not.
Then speak about testing a little bit, and we've heard this term A1C and fasting glucose, and so tell us what the testing for diabetes is, and then why is it important to know those numbers?
The hemoglobin A1C is the lab test that's most popular for diagnosing diabetes or prediabetes. Hemoglobin is a protein in our red blood cells that carries oxygen. So the hemoglobin A1C measures the percentage of how much of that hemoglobin is coated with sugar. So you can imagine that the higher the number, the more chances you have prediabetes or diabetes.
Now let's talk about managing it. If you're told that you're prediabetic, Can you stop the process, or is it inevitable? And where does diet fit in to this whole diabetes management and or prevention?
Definitely, lifestyle management can reverse prediabetes and get you back to normal. That's going to be maintaining your body mass index. That's the measure of body fat based on height and weight. And that's how we're able to calculate if someone is overweight or obese. In order to get to a healthy body mass index, you have to make the right healthy food choices. You know, to learn how to lose weight, you have to know that only 25% of your calories daily should come from fat. You've got to avoid those fatty foods such as deli meats, hot dogs, snack foods, candy, pastries, things that are easy to grab. You know, you have to motivate yourself to say no to those things. And exercise. If you combine exercise with a healthy diet, you can lose weight and you can keep it off. And that exercises your heart along with it.
So back to food for a second, because we'll touch, you know, on exercise, because exercise has an insulin-like effect, and it's so profound, the effect that exercise
right.
can have on diabetes and prediabetes. But people also hear this term low glycemic index. So what does that mean when you're trying to look, you know, obviously you don't want to eat junk food or processed food, but what types of food? Because also, doctor, people hear carbohydrates and right away they think bad, but not all carbohydrates are created equal, yes?
Exactly. So there are certain carbohydrates, which we call simple carbohydrates, that are bad. Those are the obvious things like sweetened, sugar, candies, ice cream, desserts. Those are obvious ones. But when you're choosing between, you know, what to eat in terms of bread, wheat bread is going to be better than white bread, for instance. Brown rice is better than white rice. So more complex carbohydrates is going to give you more energy, and you're going to utilize that sugar rather than let it dissolve into your blood and not be used. And besides the quality of the food, you want to look at the quantity. Obviously, if you can't go for a whole plate of brown rice, you know, it should only be a quarter of your plate, the carbohydrates for lunch and dinner. So the plate planner method is an easy way that I coach my patients, you know, in terms of how much food they should be eating.
How much exercise should we be doing every week to hopefully stave off some of these side effects and comorbidities?
The American Academy of Family Physicians, we have agreed that we should all aim to get at least 150 minutes of exercise per week. And this needs to be moderate to high intensity exercise for it to work. And so you can divvy it up. I always tell my patients, if there's 5 days that you can get to exercise, that's going to be 30 minutes on those 5 days to add up to 150. If they don't have 5 days, they can do four, and that would be 45 minutes on the 4 days. But I always like to tell them, you know, don't go more than 2 days without exercise, because once you do that, you're falling off the bandwagon in terms of regular exercise and trying to get yourself into that routine.
So in terms of managing your diabetes, how often, or if at all, should you be checking your blood sugar?
The blood sugar should definitely be checked if you're on insulin. And depending on your regimen, that can go up to as much as 3 times a day of checking, depending on if you're on fast-acting insulin or just basal insulin. For my patients that are not on any medications, because some are controlling it through lifestyle or they're just on the oral medications by mouth, they don't necessarily have to check it at all, because that hasn't been shown to actually, you know, with evidence-based medicine, it hasn't been shown or proven that it actually leads to better control of diabetes. But a patient with diabetes should have a glucose monitor on hand, especially when they're on any medications that can lower their blood sugar because of hypoglycemia. If they feel weak or low, as we like to call it, their blood sugar might be low. So they need to check, and if it's low, they need to have glucose on hand, like orange juice or glucose tablets, in order to get their blood sugar higher. The hemoglobin A1C is going to be the lab test that we run every 3 months to check on how well controlled their diabetes is.
And doctor, you mentioned the comorbidities before: cardiovascular disease and high blood pressure, stroke. These are all things that could go along with diabetes, but there are some other, sometimes lesser known things. If someone is struggling with their diabetes and they're trying to manage it, What other things like foot health and eye exams, wounds that don't heal, would you like them to pay attention to?
Every diabetes patient should check their feet regularly because if they do develop neuropathy, they might not be able to feel if they stepped on something, and that can lead to infections and wounds and amputations. So it's very important that not only do they follow up with their primary care physician for the physician to do a clinical foot exam, they need to be regularly looking at that as well. And we advise our patients to see their ophthalmologist every year at least to make sure there's no diabetes in their eyes.
It's really important information. If you would wrap it up for us with your best advice about how to live better with diabetes, what you would like the listeners to take away from this, to live that healthy lifestyle, to do the exercise and eat healthy so that they can hopefully prevent it in the first place.
My last advice would be that they're not in it alone, that, you know, if they're diagnosed with it, there are certainly many other people with diabetes, and they need to ask their physician about resources around their community to make it more effective that they will achieve their diabetes A1C goal, not just that, but lower their blood pressure. So, for instance, we have diabetes education classes that we refer our patients to. They can go one-on-one with a nutritionist or dietitian. If they can afford it, they can also get a personal trainer to help them formulate a way to exercise that they can actually fit into their lifestyle and routine. So I don't think anyone should go at it alone. They definitely have their primary care physician on board, on their team, and there's so many resources out there.
There certainly is. And thank you so much for coming on with us today and for explaining it and really how to live better with it or even possibly prevent it in the first place. Thank you again. You're listening to BayCare Health Chat. For more information, please visit baycare.org. That's baycare.org. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for tuning in.